Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. From our workshops in Juneau, Alaska and London, England, we get together on the Echolink system to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
KL7R, KL7R, M0HBR. Are you there, Mike?
Yeah, good morning, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R, good to see you on this morning. I'm seeing it's about 5 o'clock in the morning your time. You're up kind of early, over.
6 o'clock, just short of 6 o'clock Saturday morning, October 14th. This will be Solder Smoke 35. Yeah, well, I'm always up. Always up early in the morning, Mike. Good thing, because we're pretty much at well, not completely at opposite ends of the planet, but far enough apart. so it's nighttime for you and early morning in London.
Yeah. It's good to talk to you again. A visit with last week was really energizing in some ways and intimidating in other ways. After talking with Farhan there, I realized I need to spend more time doing the journeyman type work of building rather than just the thinking about it. I really don't think I'm up to the QRP challenge. But I'm ordering parts. I got a part thing going to DigiKey and to parts and kits, and I got some of those Balancor parts, so I can maybe make a BitX using the Balancors. I haven't played with them much.
Yeah, the interview with Farhan, I found it inspirational too. Yeah, and we mentioned that we had some email exchanges with Wes W7ZOI, and they were also very, I thought, very inspirational. They pushed me kind of in the opposite direction from you, though, Mike. I've been pushed back to the books, and this week I got some extra exercise because I walk part of the way to work, and I walk all the way home every day, and that's it's only 2.5 miles, but it gets me my daily exercise through the streets of London, and part of it is through Hyde Park, so it's quite nice. But I've had experimental methods in RF design in my briefcase each day, and believe me, I think I've that's a heavy book in more ways than one. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, and it's one of those kind of books that you can keep reading it and getting more out of it. It's not invisible when you see it. It's just you don't see what you're seeing when you're looking at it. you just keep finding gems in them, and I really got a lot to learn. Actually, my experience with that power amplifier kind of kicked my tail a little bit, and I need to do some more basic research, as they say. On Wes's site, I've been crawling around in there, and there's some errata for experimental methods. And in one of the errata, they mentioned that one of the transistors that they had in one of the projects in experimental methods had gone extinct. And they recommended an MJE-181, so I'm going to get 10 of them. And Wes also recommended 2SC-5739, so I'm getting 10 of them. And we'll see if they're easier to deal with than the IRF-510. So, I think it's the difference between a voltage device and a current device. I'm sure I'm going to learn something there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. You know, it's a it's really worth carrying it to work every day. I use it at the lunch hour. I find a quiet corner of the embassy, and I sit down there with experimental methods and a calculator, and I just, this week I've been trying to get a better understanding of input and output impedance matching circuits. I often worry that somebody's going to look over my shoulder and think I've gone totally nuts sitting off in the corner scribbling mathematical formulas into a book with a calculator on my lap. It could get them talking, but well, that's the risk we face as radio amateurs, Mike. well, you mentioned the IRF 510s. Let me just throw something out here. I have been experimenting with another FET device similar to the IRF 510. It's the MTP3055V, and it appeared, I think, in the I think it was in the mini boots circuit that was around for a while. And when I turn it over to you, I'll pull out the paperwork on it. But I had great luck with this thing. And there's two versions of it. There's one, a different version that has better thermal stability, which is an issue with the FETs. But I put them in a Ramsey kit amplifier. I had it shows you the way homebrew projects can go sometimes. I had a Ramsey kit amp, one of these little Q amps that they sell with two FETs and push pull, I think. And it was originally for 20 meters, and then I changed it to 40 meters. And I think it started out with IRF 510s, but I pulled those out, and now I have the MTP3055s Vs in there. I think the V model. But let me pull out the paperwork, and I'll tell you for sure. But I've always wondered why we always are using the IRF 510s, and why aren't we using these other devices? They might be better. I don't know. There might be a reason for it. People might have looked at it and decided that the IRF 510s are better. I'm not sure, but the these other devices I've been using have been fine. And they cost about 35 or 40 cents a piece, which is a good thing, because I bought a big bag of them and burned up most of them in the course of my experimentation. AL7R, M0HBR.
All right. I don't know if I've seen them. I'm thinking 3053s is what I'm thinking. So that's where the 3055 sounds so familiar. Well, I read somewhere, I can't remember where, that the IRF 510s had, you know, decent input capacitance or decent input impedance. It was kind of one of those lucky transistors. I think it had a decent input impedance or a decent input capacitance. I can't recall there. But the reason I was using them is that I could find them on the shelf at Radio Shack, and that was that was my reason for using them. It was just right there and easy to grab and play with. And I haven't burned any of them up, and I've been brutal on them. So they're a pretty tough little transistor. I've got them burn your fingerprint off hot, and they keep working. So anyway, I'm going making an order here at DigiKey. Got a few things coming. I want to experiment with. There's this transmitter that uses an octal an eight buffer line driver 20 pin dip as a half watt transmitter. I'm going to play with that a little bit and I'm gonna get a few extra parts, and I ordered a few of those Balancores. I haven't played with them much, and I got a couple big Balancores. What I ran into on the on that Motley thing was I think I was getting into core saturation on the Balancore. So I want to experiment with bigger Balancores and maybe gluing a bunch of them together, you know, the standard technique of using toroids and coax as as a one turn loop or copper tube as a one turn loop. I'm gonna play with them a little bit. Got a half a dozen things going. I can't recall them right now there. So over to you there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Okay, yeah, real good. Yeah, I know what you mean about gluing those cores together. That always seems like a fun project. And you mentioned burn your fingers hot with the transistor. I think that's another mark of a true radio amateur home brewer, radio fiend, is that if you have at one point, or perhaps even permanently, have had the kind of a burn tattoo of a transistor on your thumb. There are other characteristics, of course. Your hands probably should have two or three scars from the soldering iron, and I have on my fingers a few scars that go back, I think, to the age of 13, and I can remember a bad encounter with a soldering iron at age 13. And so I've got a few of those marks on my hands. Also, I think in the old days, not so much since we've gone to Manhattan style, but green chemical discoloration of the fingers and clothing from the etchant, the Radio Shack copper-clad board etchant. Again, this is kind of gone because we've gone to Manhattan style. But now, of course, you should also have crazy glue, and at various points have different amounts of crazy glue still stuck to your fingers and also the clothing. So all these things, Mike, are the marks of true radio amateurs. Hey, I found out the... I pulled out the article about the MOSFET, and it's in it's from the QRP ARCI organization site from 1994, and let's see, let's get the name of the author here. My copying, my printing wasn't really all that good, and my kids have used it to draw pictures on. So, let's see. Yeah, it's articles by Larry East, W1HUE. One of the articles came from the July 99 QRP Quarterly of ARCI. And he talks about modifying linears and switching from the IRF 510 to the Motorola MTP3055E TMOS Power FET. It says here, the MTP3055E is a much more rugged device than the IRF510, and therefore more likely to survive such abuse as extremely high SWR. The greater linear operating range also results in a significant reduction of those pesky 12-meter spurs discussed earlier in the article. The lower transmitter idling current is also something to consider if you do much portable operating, although this really makes little difference when operating CW. The cost of this mod is surprisingly low. The price for the MTP3055E in the newer catalog is $1.05, about the same as the IRF510. And then later on, he discusses, I think in a follow-up article, he talks about switching from the MTP3055E to a newer version, the MTP3055V, which has a lower temperature coefficient at drain currents below 1 amp. And I think I have the V model in some of the amps that I've modified. And Tom points out that the suggestion on the 3055E comes from Jim Cortez. I hope I'm saying his name right, K8IQY. So I just kind of throw out to the solder smoke listening community a question: why so many IRF510s and why aren't we using the Motorola device mentioned in these articles? Is it just ease of access, like you said? Oh, and by the way, I'm really jealous about your ability to go down to a local Radio Shack store That's just not happening here in London, Mike. KL7RM0HBR.
Well, you know, this is a pretty small town. This is Juneau, Alaska, and there are two Radio Shack stores in this town. One of them is a pretty good store. The other one is basically a place to sell cell phones. But they both have solder you can buy, and I think they both have a small amount of electronics you can get. If you're hurting for batteries, that's the place to go there. Well, I just did a Google. I just did a search on DigiKey, and I didn't find any M Mike Tango Papa 3055s in stock. They had some Vs and VLs that were non-stock, but they didn't have them in stock. So it's kind of adding up there, Bill. I think it's a matter of convenience. I'd like to build the one that Steve Weber did. I'd like to do that. So he got tens of watts out of two of them, and I only got less than 10 watts out of two of them. So I want to figure out what the heck he did right versus what I didn't do right. And I think I'm close. I just there must be some sleight of hand there that he is good at that I'm not. He's a better wizard than I am. Let's see. I heard a note on QRPL that Borland is giving out their free Turbo Pascal again, and I am a Turbo Pascal nut, or I was before 1995, before the internet, and they have Delphi again, so I'm downloading Delphi. I remember when Turbo Pascal came on a single floppy disk, and there was room to spare. I think it was like 32K or something. And I'm downloading half of Delphi, and it's 320 meg. So it's 10,000 times as big. Does that seem right there, Bill? Go ahead.
Well, the your computer and the internet are doing just fine, Mike, because there's an occasional kind of little echo in there that our listeners are here, and I think that's because you're simultaneously downloading Turbo Pascal. So, well, good luck with that. Yeah, you mentioning that reminds me of a couple of things. There's talking about retro technology. I check the YouTube site once a week or so, and there's a lot of really trashy videos on there. A lot of drunken college students who apparently think they're clever, but they're not. But amidst all the trash, there's a lot of good videos out there too, and they're fun. And I found a couple of good ones this morning. One about a guy who built a crystal radio, and he came up with a really well done video, about a 5-minute video, presenting the crystal radio, and he has it playing in the background as he's describing it, which is pretty neat. But the really neat part is that he uses real Galena and cat's whisker the old way, and he has to tickle the Galena with the cat's whisker to find the sweet spot. And I guess that's the theme that's emerging in this night's show, the true radio amateur. And I think all, as I get up on my soapbox here, all true radio amateurs should, at one point or another, have used Galena crystal and phosphor bronze cat's whisker. stop me, quick, because pretty soon I'll be demanding that we all go back to Spark. but anyway, I thought that was a fun video, and I'm going to put it up on the video page of the www.gadgeteer.us site. And then I found another one, sort of similar, but an 18-year-old kid whose hobby is repairing old tube-type broadcast radios and also 1970s-era computer equipment. And the local TV station did a report on him, and somebody uploaded it to YouTube. And it was a neat report. The guy's got a very nice shack and workbench there. And it's really inspirational too, because the kid is he's deaf, and but in spite of that has really gotten into the old radios. He puts his hands on the speakers, and he has a cochlear implant that he can hear some of it. But it was a very nice report and inspirational, so I'll put that up on the page. But yeah, Turbo Pascal. Hey, I'll turn it back over to you. Remind me to tell you about the hovercrafts made from muffin fans. KL7RM0HBR.
Okay. that's a good one there. Well, I guess I'm not a true ham. I guess I'm not a true homebrewer. I have yet more to learn there. My first experience with homebrewing was with a 1M34A diode, and I was a Boy Scout or a Cub Scout, and that and a wire and a plug in the ear crystal earphone I learned quite a bit with, but I never did make a Galena. My mom was a rock hound, and she had all kinds of Galena laying around. I wish I had grabbed a piece and tried to do it. She had I could find a piece of Galena around here, but I never did that. I tried the razor blade thing, but didn't get anywhere. I'll have to try that again. Razor blade and pencil lead, I think it is, thing. And I read about foxhole radios where they rolled a pencil lead on two razor blades, but I didn't try that. So, but I have sitting above my bench a Quaker Oats box with 99 turns of wire on it. So I'm ready to experiment whenever I get back to that. But yeah, in Cub Scouts, I built a Quaker Oats variable inductor that had 99 turns of insulated wire on it, and you had to scrape the wire off, and then you had this piece of tin can that just slid along the wire, and then you made a capacitor out of tin foil and not saran wrap, but wax paper. So I got close, but I didn't get the Galena, so heck, I wish I was a real homebrewer there. Let's see. Oh, you were talking about the sites you found on the net. One of my geek buddies, who is really blazingly smart, is a coder fiend. He turned me on to a site that's homebrewcpu.com. Homebrewcpu.com. And this guy is hardcore. He built from scratch a microcomputer using nothing but 74 series TTL chips. He built a computer, and he made the assembler, and he bolted in a C compiler and made an operating system, and the whole thing called the Magic One, and it's at homebrewcpu.com. That's homebrewing right there. Another thing, almost made it to the level of consciousness, but not quite. That's one of the things I've always wanted to do, is build a hovercraft, Bill. I wanted to build one, and I had, semi-ideas when I was a teenager, and I always read about taking a lawnmower and making a blade and on a 5-foot block, and then you could ride it down the street. How do you make one out of muffin fans there, Bill? M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR. Oh, man, so many things you say just get me thinking about things. I have to take notes here. But, well, yeah, fine. Using the store-bought diode there, that's, it's a, not quite the Galena, the full Galena experience. I guess the full Monty. But, the fact that you have wound wire around a Quaker Oats box, that is, you get major credit for that, Mike. So you're in good shape. Don't worry about your status as a true radio fiend. Having wound magnet wire on a Quaker Oat box gets you in the club, I think, pretty well. And also, I must say, having experimented with razor blade radios, foxhole radios, that also is very much in your favor. So I think you're doing fine. The Galena and the crystal radios, it's really fun because the galena, you have to find that sweet spot. And I think the scientifically amazing thing about this is they didn't even know what was going on at the time, of course. But what they were doing, without knowing it, they were forming little PN junctions, sort of naturally. They were, in a sense, you could say that they were home brewing their own transistors or their own diodes, at least. And you know, you'd have the phosphor bronze and the galena, and because of the crystal structure of the galena, if you got the phosphor bronze on there at just the right position, it would form a PN junction, and that would be the detector, the diode that would rectify the RF, and then you'd pull the audio out of the envelope there of the AM signal. So that really gets you to the point of homebrew transistors, which fits in very well with the homebrew CPU guy. And I guess if you're a real true home brewer, store-bought transistors are just, those are for the appliance operators, you know what I mean? You got to have your homebrew transistors. I've seen websites where there are guys actually doing this. They're using point contact, the old point contact technique, and creating their own point contact transistors. Now, I don't think they're building any 20-meter single sideband rigs with these devices, but you got to give them credit. And this also reminds me of the homebrew tube thing. I was a boat anchor and tube radio fan for a long time. And every once in a while, somebody would come in with stories of a guy who had a vacuum pump and a glass blower and was homebrewing his own vacuum tubes. And we were able to confirm that it has happened. And there's some discussion of it from the old days in 200 meters and down from the ARRL. But you're really getting hardcore when you're homebrewing your own transistors and vacuum tubes. That might be a little bit over the top, as the Brits would say. All right, hovercrafts. Back to hovercrafts. Make blog, makezine, on the web, one of my favorite sites. Great stuff in there. Sometimes they have stuff that's not really kind of our kind of stuff. There's an occasional foray into macrame and knitting and things like that. But there's also a lot of good electronics in there. And kind of innovative technology. And this guy, I forget who he was, but I'll try to give him credit later on, but posted a little article about, you take a muffin fan, just the kind of the cooling fan that comes out of, you know, they have them on old computer CPUs and old RF power amplifiers. They're all over the place. They're little 12-volt fans. You know what I'm talking about. They're squares, gets about an inch thick. You put 12 volts on them, and off they go. And what you do is, for the skirt of the hovercraft, you just take an ordinary paper plate, you know, the kind of paper plate that kind of has a skirt coming down. If you can get the picture, it's got kind of a little bowl, and you flip it over, and you just cut out a little square in the center of it, large enough so that you could put you could mount the muffin fan on it, and. Then you take a little bit of tape to seal it around, so you get a good seal, and put a couple batteries on there. The guy on the magazine site used a 9-volt battery with two AA's in series, but I figured what the heck, and I went with two 9-volt batteries and took it up to 18 volts, which really got that thing going. And man, you put it on the floor and it's a hovercraft. And all the kids had great fun with it. They had great fun with it, of course, until one of them stuck their fingers into the fan, which was not a good move. But a Band-Aid took care of that. KL7RM, 0HBR.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully it was the older child and not the younger one. Well, you jacked it up, too. You ran it up to 18 volts, and just like turn her finger into hamburger there. That's no good. Well, you triggered a couple of thoughts in my mind. You mentioned tubes, the homebrew tubes, and I was over on the BitX 20 Yahoo group, and Han Summers made a note in there that he had homebrewed his own oscilloscope and a little micro oscilloscope. You remember the NLS oscilloscope? They were like 2 inches by 4 by 6 or something like that. I had one of them, and it died on me, so I had to throw it away. But he built one that's about, I'm thinking maybe 4 inch by 4 inch by 4 inch out of PC board. And it's got a couple of tubes in it, and it's got this little maybe 1 inch across, maybe 2.5 inches across oscilloscope face. And it's got all little knobs in it. It's really clean looking. It looks like a little QRP rig with a window into it. It's cool stuff. Let's see. I mentioned I saw on Hackaday a guy had built an electric bike. He took the engine out of a 50cc bike and put a 6 12-volt batteries and a DC to DC converter and I think a 72-volt motor in there and changed the gearing on it and he said he gets from 0 to 60 in 9 seconds and he can get up to 75 miles an hour and looked pretty sporty and seemed like a really appropriate use of technology. Another thing I'd like to experiment sometime, but that'd be an expensive one. Trying to build a car, though, that would be a real expensive electric car. One of the guys in town here had a Volkswagen, and he made it into an electric car, a little brick red Volkswagen, and he'd plug it into local radio station and drive it home. And I think the bike would be fun. Let's see. Well, I guess I'm about out here, Bill. Over to you, M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, great stuff on Hackaday and on Makezine, and we'll find on Hans's homebrew oscilloscope. it sounds like the kind of innovative stuff that he does. So I have to send him. I have an email here at the minute, meaning to get back to him, and we're going to try to meet up here in London and talk homebrew stuff here. Well, you mentioned 2 Radio Shacks in Juneau. Well, you're 2 ahead of London there, Mike. And this is a pretty much a radio free city as far as I can tell. And every once in a while on the GQRP list, somebody will send a message saying, "Hey, I'm coming into Central London. Can anybody recommend radio stores or component shops?" And all the folks who've been living here for a long time come back and say, "Sorry, no more. They're all gone." So you can buy all the Gucci handbags you want around here, but I tell everybody, if you needed an electrolytic capacitor, if your life depended on it, you couldn't get one around here, which is kind of discouraging. But heck, that's what we got the internet for. Well, fine, on the electric car, we're starting to see them here in Central London, the hybrid cars, and I think there's a number of straight electric cars out there too, and they have a congestion charge tax here. If you drive into Central London, there's a whole zone here. It's been in the papers, but you end up paying, I think it's up to £8 now, $16 roughly, $15 roughly. Just to drive in. That's not for parking. That's just for crossing the line. You better pay up by the end of the night, or else they're going to get you. But I think electric and hybrid vehicles are exempt from this. So people are. You don't see a lot of them, but you see some of them. And you see this Toyota has a hybrid called. I think it's called the Prion or something, or Prius or something like that. Not Prion. Prion would be a bad name for it, but I think it's Prius. I saw one of those yesterday. They have big green stickers on it, and plug them in. Off you go. Great fun. And you got to put some solar panels on the roof. All right. Let's see. What am I going to work on now? I still have my ceramic oscillator over there on the bench. It's sitting next to experimental methods. And what I think I'm going to do next is take some of the advice that we've been getting in emails from Wes and between the covers of experimental methods and try to scientifically and methodically, using the method in experimental methods, design a series of RF amplifiers to take it up to about 5 watts. But I want to do it methodically. I don't want to just do the way I always do it, which is just build one amplifier stage and then heck, throw another one on. So I think I want to get disciplined and get the experimental method that Wes and the other authors have espoused and get that working. So that's my next project here. It might not produce any real spectacular results. I might just come up with two or three stages of RF amplifier that gets me to the power level that I want, but I think that would be a worthwhile project. So that's what I'm going to be doing, and hopefully by the next Solder Smoke episode we'll be able to report on that. Hey, listen, before we go, I'll turn it over to you, Mike, and then while you're talking, I'm going to pull up, there's a couple of, I guess we better do a Solder Smoke mailbag. I'll pull up my mailbox here, but over to you, and I'll get to the mailbox while you're talking. KL7RM0HBR.
Okay, Bill. My wife just came in. She's hitting the rack. So there were a couple of really good items that were passed there, and I need to study them myself. I got the idea of what he was doing, but I need to spend some time melting and seeing how that'll work. I got so much to learn in that regard. This hobby has so many facets to it. There's so much to learn. I ran into a friend of mine and I said, come on over, check out the ham shack, He says, I don't know if I want to do that. I'd only do it for nostalgic reasons, or maybe I'd do it to get my son interested in ham radio. But really, there's nothing left for me there. And I said, oh no, man, it's fascinating. There's so many interesting and brain tweaking things you can do. I felt differently than he did about it. Yeah, I think we're getting towards the end here, Bill. I had a couple of thoughts, but they wouldn't be something you could answer in a simple sentence. How would you go about actually measuring the input impedance of an amplifier? With an RF bridge or something like that. Or how do you measure the SWR of How do you measure the output impedance of an amplifier? How do you know how to design the output transformer and the input transformer? And there's a lot of it depends going on. I think it depends on the bias and all that. But that's something that's got my interest right now. How would you actually go about measuring something like that? I guess there was a couple of QEX articles on guys trying to do it. I couldn't find it. So, back to you there, Bill. Nice talking to you again this evening. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Okay, real good. Yeah, well, those are the questions that are at the heart of the design process, Mike. So you're asking the right questions, and those are the ones I'm kind of struggling with, and I'm going to use the software that came with experimental methods, the discussion in the text, obviously. Also, LT Spice is a big help, and the spreadsheets that we were working on a while back are also very helpful. And you do have to understand how the biasing conditions affect input impedance, for example, and all that kind of stuff, and it all fits together. And then you have to control the gain, and then you get into the two different kinds of feedback. It's one little stage of RF amplification can be very complicated, and a lot of things going on at the same time. So that's the task, and that's what I'm going to be working on. Hey, before we go, let's do a little bit of Solder Smoke mailbag. I don't have the gong. The kids took the gong. So that was the the lamp in substitution for the gong. Martin PG1N, we mentioned his website. He sent a note saying that he's moved to a different site, and it's at home.hetnet, H-E-T-N-E-T, .nl in the Netherlands, with a PG1N after it. I hope people can get to that. Perhaps it might be better just to Google it and look for the new site. We got a nice email from Kay Hartman, K-A-G-Z. He said he's been working on Pound Shop radios that Hans Summers has been talking about. We got a lot of nice email about the interview with Farhan, including email from Indian radio amateurs, but I didn't get that mailbox open fast enough, so we'll go through that in a follow-on solder smoke. Hey, I know it's getting late in Juneau, and the kids will be getting up soon here. It'll be time for breakfast in London, so let's wrap it up and say 7-3s. Thanks to everybody who listens. Please send us email. We like to get feedback, and so please send us some mail. You can send it to us at at soldersmoke@yahoo.com, and that'll get to us. But I'll let you go, Mike. It sounds like it's bedtime in Juneau. KL7R M0HBR.
Okay, Bill. Yeah, I've been kind of a rough week here, so it's only 9:30, but sometimes you want to hit the rack a little early. Okay, Bill. Well, best to you and best to the guys. I feel a little bit humbled after the visit from like I say, Wes and from Farhan. But on the other hand, I feel kind of excited about some more experiments here. All right, talk to you later there, Bill. 73 M0HBR, KL7R.
73, Mike.